Okay. Here we go. All right. So welcome back to the Cracks in Postmodernity. Today we have Kyle, the host of the page, I Need God in Every Moment of My Life. We're very excited to have you on, Kyle.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be on. I love being asked to be on things. So had to say yes.
So Kyle, for those who don't know your page, what can you tell them? Give us a little bit of background about like how you came up with it and the kind of stuff you post.
Sure, yeah. For someone who doesn't know the page at all, it's an Instagram page called I Need God in Every Moment of My Life. Its theme is God. And so the posts are all spirituality, God, religion, belief, conspiracy, anything to do with the spiritual and godly. And it's basically just a curation of memes and found images. Sometimes we make them, but most often not. And then, so it's like a curation of God content, kind of from every corner, every part of the spectrum of God that could be online. I run it, but three other people are admins too. Mm-hmm. So anyone could really post to it. It's kind of a group project to start. And yeah, I guess it's resonated and brought God back to the mainstream in a big way.
Yeah. No, I mean, we see all kinds of people posting your apparel, the clothes that you sell from the page.
Yes.
But so like, why a God themes page? Like what's behind, what inspired that whole concept?
Yeah. I've always been interested in God. I was raised Catholic, and I went to Catholic school until second grade, and then I was a cantor at church until I graduated high school.
Okay.
And then through high school, it was like 2005 to 2009, and I was kind of like emo, not really believing in God, but still like singing at church every weekend. So I had a sort of like dual identity at church in a way where it's like, I don't know if I believe in this, but I'm participating in the production of it.
Yeah.
And that gave me kind of a lot of perspective that I feel like transfers over to the project.
Yeah.
I've always been interested in just like esoteric things, bigger picture things, like big brain thing.
Yeah.
And I attribute that to astrology actually, because okay. I practice astrology and it's just like in my birth chart that way. So I just feel like I was born in this way, like interested in God in the most broad sense. So yeah, it's something I've always been interested in and used in my art and my life. So it's just like a natural progression kind of for me. And it was done with friends who were also interested in God at the time. And we just had a knowledge that the conversation about God was about to get really big. And we wanted to like start our Instagram page before we missed the wave of it. And so that's why we kind of did it to start.
So when you say like you have this sense that the idea of God was going to be big, what made you say that? Like, what signs did you see coming?
That's a great question, but I don't even know. It was mostly a feeling. Another thing about me is I've been online since I've been like 12.
Okay.
So I've been online participating in internet culture, kind of, you know, to my benefit and to my detriment in an addictive kind of way. So it was like, we just knew just by being tapped in.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are particular signs, but it was just like, maybe there was more God content being made that we noticed and we were sharing with each other. And it was about the same time that praying was about to begin too when we started our page. So it was just like on the tip of this kind of, I don't know why. It must have to do with Neptune's transit through like Pisces or something.
Okay. So I'm curious to hear, I mean, first of all, like you cover a whole range of different types of memes, but also brands of spirituality. So you mentioned like you have like these trad kind of Catholic imagery, you have astrology, sometimes you have Muslim posts. So like you're covering a broad span. But that's why I'm curious to know, like, what kind of response are you getting from all different kinds of believers and non-believers?
Yeah, the response is varied.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's good because the page is kind of designed to kind of toe a line between like sincerity and irony and belief and non-belief, so people from like any all parts of the spectrum responds to it. On the nicest side of things, it's people saying like, me and my mom were religiously traumatized and now we're addicted to your page and send memes to each other, and like I love seeing it every day and like it helps me cope or something. Or my faith has been reignited and like I started going to church again, and like you made me be able to appreciate God and Jesus in a way I wasn't able to like approach it before, or like I was afraid to laugh at it or like, laugh at myself for believing in something. And now I like find myself, you know, like genuinely believing in my faith from growing up or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's like awesome. I love that. Yeah. And then there's more like the confused response, which would be like, are you guys serious? Do you really believe in God? Are you mocking people? Like, what do you really believe? Are you a Christian or are you not? Like people kind of like being angrily confused.
Yeah.
And I guess on the hater side, the haters are kind of quiet, which is nice. Sometimes one or two will say something, but usually not in a DM. And usually like something I would find elsewhere, like not directly at us, like someone commenting like, oh, I hate this page or something. But it's, I feel like people who really don't like the kind of humor the page posts don't engage with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Because when I first found the page, I thought I understood what was going on, but then a couple of posts later, I was like, wait, no, this is, like, it's hard to pin down exactly what you're doing. And also, like, like on it from a, I guess you could say a political perspective, like, there's some posts that, like, may appeal to certain factions, there are others that may piss the same faction off. It's, yeah, like, it's all over.
It's pissing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not trying to really convert me into you believe one thing or another, but sometimes I'll post something and it's like, feels like my heart is saying this. Sure, like it's a Facebook mom prayer post, and it's like, not a joke. Or sometimes it's just like a found image that I know people are going to like, and I'll just post it because of that. You know what I mean? It's not something I really care about what it says.
Yeah, and I think whether or not people looking at the page agree, like, all these memes do make you think.
Yeah.
Like, if it does make you ask certain, like, spiritual questions.
Yeah, and I think it's important. I think there is an effect. Excuse me. I think there is a necessity to God, whether you believe or not.
Yeah.
So, like, regardless of belief, disbelief, there's still a necessity for a power that's above a human power, I think. Kind of deep in our humanity.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
It's all right.
And having reminders of that on your feed every day is something that could be positive. Also, like, when you think about, like, what you're not supposed to talk about at family dinner, it'd be, like, religion and politics, right? And it's just like, okay, maybe, like, religion could be more a part of our conversation if we aren't so hot-headed about it or dogmatic.
Yeah, no. And the other thing that, I mean, I'm sure drove a lot of traffic to your page was there was this Vox article, I guess it was last summer that came out?
Yeah, like last autumn, maybe.
Probably, yeah. So that was interesting because it was, the author was trying to capture this, like, I forget how she phrased it, basically, like, this trend in, like, weird Christianity, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Can I add some sugar, too?
We're in a cafe right now. You guys, you couldn't tell. We didn't
We're going to take, like, a quick quick diversion. So we're at the famous Cafe Reggio in the West Village.
I would call this the Village.
The Village. Mm-hmm. We're like, what? We're right under Washington Square Park.
Exactly, yeah. It's NYU.
Yeah, NYU area. No, it's
McDougal Street, specifically.
McDougal Street, yes.
Yeah.
So we're right across from Louisa May Alcott's house. And then you said it was Bob Dylan who wrote a song?
Or like Bob Dylan lived here too, in Minetta Lane.
Probably.
Something like that. I forget. But there's history here. There's history.
Yeah. Yeah, so no, I mean, it's an interesting place because it's covered in all, like, I don't know what, like, Renaissance-ish Italian art.
Yeah.
You got some religious images around here. There's some, like, Orthodox icons in the back.
Yeah.
Like, hidden somewhere. And then there are two paintings. So the one across there, that is a student of Caravaggio. That's an original.
Oh, really?
And there's another one around the corner.
Oh, my God. It's really funny in here. I'm Italian-American, so this is really hitting the spot.
Yeah.
The vibe is old Italian grandmothers.
Exactly.
Like, kitchen and basement.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this used to be an Italian neighborhood back in the day.
Oh.
Yeah, because, like, what, two blocks over, you have Our Lady of Pompeii, which was, like, the Italian church. Mm. There are a few more Italian restaurants, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you got that history. But anyway, so, no, the Vox article. It was, just, like, capturing this new trend on social media, celebrities. I don't know.
So people say Catholicism is trending or something, and this has been, like, a media narrative that all these websites have been running with, and it's like, that's kind of what the Vox article's main idea was coming into it. And when they interviewed me, they're talking about, like, why is Catholicism trending specifically? And I did another interview recently with this ABC radio in Australia.
Cool.
And they had the same kind of topic, and it's very confusing to me because I'm like, is Catholicism really trending? Like, this isn't I don't really believe that's true. I feel like it's just a media story about it trending, where it's like people are the same amount of Catholic as they ever were. In my mind, of like, okay, are there really more kids becoming Catholic? I don't think so. I think like I did for my podcast, I Need God Pod, I interviewed Dasha Nekrasova, who I feel like is maybe the reason that this whole idea even exists in media, where it's like she is vocally Catholic and kind of like jumped into this trad cath trend a few years ago. And I think that's all it really is I think it's just a posturing, maybe just like an online aesthetic, not real, in my opinion.
That's what I was gonna say, like she's the real reason. She's one of the reasons. I think like it was the Met Gala when they did the Catholic Imagination.
Oh yeah, Heavenly Bodies.
So there was that one that kind of set a precedent for this.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It brought like the aesthetic to the front. Kind of like when the Met Gala did the camp show. Now all the kids are saying camp to describe everything.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay.
I mean,
I like Catholicism and I think it's cool and interesting, but like the Vox article, I guess it drove traffic to my page. I don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing though, so like now that Dasha's doing what she's doing, I am seeing a surprising amount of young people who now are curious about Catholicism because of her. Some are doing it as performance just to be ironic. Some are like spiritually seeking through that avenue. Then there are some other people, like my younger brother's in college now, and he's just like kind of disillusioned with like straight up secularism, and Catholicism is most readily available to him, so that's why. And he's not doing it in like a kitschy pietistic way, but he's like, I don't know, like genuinely seeking something. So I think in general, I do think there's a trend of young people seeking some kind of spiritual escape from secularism.
That's true. Right? I agree with that. Yeah, like with astrology is the same thing.
Yeah.
So you guys were raised Catholic because you're Italian?
Kind of. I'm also a little Greek Orthodox.
Oh, okay.
So
cool.
That's where I like mostly went to church as a kid. But
got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it'll mix.
I feel like I should be interviewing you because I like looked you up before meeting you and I was like, oh, you're like a religion professor or something.
A fake one, yeah.
A fake one? What do you mean?
I'm just an adjunct. I'm not like a real
professor. Oh, okay. Yeah. My friend just quit her PhD at Rutgers.
Yeah,
she did it for 4 years, so like was like, I can't do it anymore.
I would quit a PhD at Rutgers like the first day.
Yeah, she's doing like media studies.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah.
I hear horror stories from that place.
Oh yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, academia right now.
Not great.
Not a place I want.
You got to start your own school.
That's the thing. A lot of weird Catholic people are doing that.
Yeah.
But.
My friend L.A. Warman has her own school, the Warman School. I recommend anyone who's like interested in taking like independent writing courses to look it up because it's rad. And I love people who just do independent stuff like that. I would take so many classes if more people were doing that.
Yeah. But you went to NYU and you were saying that you were pleased with the graduate experience less so than undergrad, right?
Yeah, I went to graduate and undergraduate school at NYU. It was kind of a mistake. Like my parents didn't go to college. They're poor right now. Like I have so much debt from it. And we were just really naive about it, honestly. And we all just thought you could do anything. It was 2009.
Okay.
And I shouldn't have gone to grad school because I guess I have so much debt from it, but I'm not paying it anyway. It doesn't matter. The performance studies department at NYU is really good. It's a pocket of good amongst the negative mass of academia, I think.
Yeah.
There's a few programs in the that are good, and there's good people in them, and performance studies is one of them. Like Fred Moten teaches there, and some looks like really great, neo-Marxist kind of. It's basically social studies, which is my favorite kind of studies, with a focus on performance and not necessarily, it could be performance of anything. Like my thesis was on One Direction fandom, and I'm really interested in like secular modes of worship.
Okay.
So I did it on like how a Tumblr blog could be an altar, and how altar making is a women's practice that women would do apart from like the patriarchal church practices, like a private queer practice, honestly. And I also did it about the concert experience and like the ecstasy of teenage screaming and idols come to flesh before your eyes.
Yeah.
And then the safety of pining over feminine masculinity, which you can never attain, and how those boys act as a way to become straight because you could desire something that won't hurt you, kind of, because you'll never come in contact with it.
So you did this all at NYU.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing that you have the space to explore that kind of stuff.
I mean, the performance studies program is really like, when I did it anyway, it was 2014, so like almost 10 years ago, but it was like very open. Like you didn't have to write a paper necessarily. You could do a performance and a paper.
Okay.
You could kind of, it's very woo-woo in a sense.
Yeah.
And my favorite teacher, her name was Deborah Kapchen.
Okay.
And her whole thing is about the art is about listening and deep listening. And she's Moroccan and she is a Sufi. And
interesting.
I took a class literally just called Listening with her. And that was the best. She rocks. But it's like kind of like, but there are also hard asses there too. There's this woman called Anne Pellegrini, and she is like a queer Freud studies lady, and she wrote books about secularism. She wrote one called Secularisms about the plurality of the secular and how the secular and the religious co-form each other and can't exist without each other, kind of. And that informed me a lot too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Were you exposed at all to Charles Taylor's work on secularism?
I'm not familiar, no.
Okay, so that's one of like the big theorists of secularism.
Okay.
But no, but there is a guy we had on the podcast a couple of months ago, Jamie Smith, who has this idea of what he calls cultural liturgies.
Okay.
And he's challenging the idea that like there's such a thing as neutrality, that like there are certain experiences that are devoid of any kind of spiritual forces.
Right.
And one of the things he writes about is the concert experience, because like it's extremely spiritual, you know. And I don't know, I'm curious to hear like more of what you wrote about having to do with like how the concert, like how is the concert a liturgy in itself?
Right. I mean, you can go on academia.edu and search up my paper. It's called Girl Almighty. I use this piece, I think her name is Gail Walden. She wrote a paper called like Teeny Boppers and Spiritual Valley, maybe in the late 90s, early 2000s, about like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, and I used her piece a lot in mine. And the concert, so like, I guess I'm trying to think about what I wrote about, but the thesis was kind of like the queer spirit of the secular, and particularly through music groups and music objects like Elvis, the Beatles, One Direction, and how they use multimedia experiences to captivate their audiences, especially the young audience, and then how the person's relationship to the media object is a queer one, in a sense that everyone holds a different relationship, almost like a fantasy in their mind about what it means to them, how they relate to it. We think about fan fiction or how people elaborate in personal ways, I guess, on the media object. So when everyone comes together, they're actually coming together in difference, because it's a private thing, that it's almost like a private pleasure you experience, but then at the concert, that private pleasure becomes almost, I guess you could say, a public one that's shared. And then everyone's personal relationship comes together and to create a queer ecstasy, an excess.
Interesting.
And that queer excess is like the ecstasy of the concert. And you think about like in olden times, women would have to like go to the edge of the community to go scream or something, right? But like the concert becomes a place that it's safe to scream and to like have this kind of ecstatic release of pleasure. And a safe place to do that. And I just think there's something like so powerful to that. And then the trippiness of your idol becoming flesh was part of my idea too. It's like, it's all fantasy with between you and your friends. You have jokes, you have inside jokes, you have, you know, using these characters, essentially characters that are mediated. And then when it's in person, like the collapsing of all of that is overwhelming because like you have to like deal with that it's real in a sense. And like, it's kind of like makes you go, trips you out in a sense that is, brings you to a place of beyondness that you would, that is like, you know, spiritual. So it's like you're worshiping, but not at a church. So it is the underlying forces are capitalistic and
very much
sinister.
Yes.
So it's complicated, but it serves a good purpose, but it also like is capturing, it's kind of, I don't know, it's complicated. I don't really remember exactly everything I wrote.
Yeah,
that's the most I could kind of say about it.
Look at academia.
I wrote it 10 years ago, so like, you know what I mean? But I said something.
No, but I relate to what you're saying, because I don't know, when I was younger, I would go to concerts all the time. And I realized in retrospect, it was because of this kind of like spiritual seeking, because there's something very ecstatic about it. And as time went on, I started to realize like, there's definitely a dark kind of ecstasy, because like, it fills you up, it brings you to this climax only to really empty you out. And it doesn't like, because I don't know, like I've experienced other types of like religious ecstatic things that provide you, that bring you to a climax that actually, that is substantial, that lasts for a while.
Right.
The concert, like as soon as it's over, you have this low, you feel empty.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, in a sense I relate it to like, I don't know, in a way I think there's something demonic there. I think there's something like,
it's interesting, it's something you're supposed to grow out of.
Right. Yeah, and I feel that I'm like done with it at this point.
Exactly, where it's like, okay, I went to the Lady Gaga concert this summer, and I participate, I scream, and I have to kind of force myself to do it, and I love it, but you know, it is childish to do for some reason. It feels that way.
Well, there's a desire for something more sustainable.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas if you go to like a small venue type of concert when it's not like a big celebrity, that I feel like has a lot more substance than the type of ecstasy. It like it feeds you in a different way.
Yeah, it's not the same though.
Yeah.
But it's not to say that there's no value in, and that there's not something really important going on in these like kind of fan cultures.
Very important.
I think, yeah, like I've always just been interested in fans, like audiences, fandom, worship, idolatry, and then like the other side of it, like being the performer and performance, and like that is something I'll always be interested in.
No, and like when I look at my childhood, like I was the type of kid who was like constantly obsessed with celebrities. Like I always had my one person I was obsessed with for the moment.
Yes.
And there's something very natural about this. Like we want to have some idol to worship.
Yeah.
And then like as time went on and you know, I started to learn more about like the saints.
Sure.
It's the type of relationship one has with the saint is different because like I can ask a saint to pray for me.
Right.
I can ask Beyonce to pray for me.
I know.
Sacrifice, like people have killed themselves for Beyonce.
I mean, I think it's better because they're more eternal, these saints. Like they're canonized and institutionalized in a way that the secular version isn't. There's just so much more flux in the secular sphere in a way. And but they mirror each other in a sense, or at least the secular is mirroring the religious. And it's like, we don't have a state church or a state religion like England does. So celebrity culture is a lot like royalty culture.
Yeah.
People are making prayer candles to Beyonce for sure.
Yes, I've seen.
And it's like, well, at least they're getting something. The people who don't have any religion and are lighting a candle to Harry Styles, it's like cringy and makes you sick. But like, at least, at least, you know,
better.
There's something there and you could see that maybe we're in a really early stage of some longer project of merging all of like religion and state, maybe. I don't know.
No, I think that's definitely true. It's better to have the Harry Styles candle than to like have nothing.
Yeah.
Then you're spiritually dead. You know?
Yeah. yeah, it's definitely curious. Like when I did my thesis project, I went to like a girl's room who had a Harry Styles cardboard cutout and a bedspread and all for walls and posters.
Yeah, that was like me. Not for Harry Styles.
But you know, so just like asking her how she relates to each of these objects in her room, and they all hold a story for her, and the reason she put them in a particular part of her room holds meaning for her, and like through the arrangement of these objects she anchors herself to the world. And it's like, wow.
No, I totally get that, because like you want, when you revere these figures, like you want it to be all-encompassing, like you want it. And again, like I don't think Harry Styles can really fill my life with that kind of deeper meaning I need, but at least there's an attempt to grasp for that meaning.
Yeah.
Which I think like certain religious figures like the saints potentially can lead you to that more substantial meaning. But
yeah. And in no small part due to the power of music and how music moves us and makes us feel and changes us, which I think music and sound are like fundamentally spiritual.
Yes.
And there is no such thing as secular music actually.
Music is religious and it's by its nature.
Yeah. Or at least spiritual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to some hot topics.
Okay,
one
sure.
Hot takes. So you're a fan of Marianne Williamson.
Yes.
The bitch for God.
The what?
The bitch for God. That's what she calls herself.
Oh, okay.
Did you ever hear that? No, I think it wasn't the Democratic National Convention. It was some speech where she's like, I'm a bitch for God.
Oh.
I think it's pretty accurate.
I love that she would say that. Yes.
So what appeals to you about Marianne Williamson?
She is the candidate that appeals to me. I'm feeling like I Need God is going to campaign for her. What appeals to me about her is her politics and her femininity. I like that she is so smart and educated about American history. She's really well spoken. She's a really moving speaker. And she's not shy to share her beliefs.
Yeah.
I just think that she really sees the bigger picture in a way that many other people don't. And I like that she stand like her main thing, I guess, is standing up to like corruption in politics and corrupt money and stuff like that. basically, I don't believe in the project of America. I don't really think America should exist. I think we should dissolve it. I think, like, you know, no president is a good president and all of that. I don't really vote. I vote, but, like, I don't really care.
Yeah.
But, you know, I understand that America isn't just going to dissolve into nothing and that the system that's in place is going to continue. So as long as that's happening, if I had to pick a candidate, I would pick her. Yeah, she's just stunning, charismatic, gorgeous. Yep.
She's funny.
She's funny, very funny. And she's articulate. Her core issues, I stand with her. I need, like, taking money out of politics and environmental issues, reparations, things like that. Just think she's awesome.
And it's hard to pin down her own brand of spirituality. It's very unique, I would say.
Yeah. I would say it's woo-woo adjacent. Yeah. It's definitely woo-woo. And I'm like all for the woo-woo.
Yeah.
A Return to Love, which, or A Course on Miracles, is based on a book. Or maybe A Return to Love is based on A Course in Miracles. And A Course in Miracles apparently is like a CIA-funded MK Ultra project.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that part is like, you know, freaks me out a little bit that claim to fame is based on this like government funded book. But other than that, I mean, that doesn't really bother me. I guess it just adds to the intrigue, if anything.
Do you have any MK Ultra hot takes?
Ultra hot takes?
MK Ultra.
Oh, MK Ultra? Not really. I feel like, you know, to this day, the government is influencing public thought in ways that are unknown and sinister. So it's pretty disheartening to think that if there was ever an organic movement or thought or belief, that it could be easily destroyed or intercepted by, like, evil forces that use dark psychology or something.
Yeah, I just find the denial of all those things to be, like, at this point, how I don't understand how people deny that these things are going on, you know? It's like, I just feel like it's becoming so blatant.
Honestly, everything that, it's all hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of it is. Like, there are just things that, like, I'm not too conspiratorial, but I do think there's a reason that people are conspiratorial.
Yeah.
And that there are things, bigger things going on that everybody is wrong about and we just don't know. And I think, like, the lies are just so blatant and so unhidden at times that it becomes, like, that's exactly what makes them hard to know what, like, what's real or not, or, like, what is actually, like, being planted or deceptive.
Interesting. Yeah. We'll soon find out, I'm sure, at some point.
Or we'll just never find out. Maybe. It's like, there are just things we take for granted as everyday truths that are just not true, but we'll never know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, so the other thing I was going to ask, you're a big fan of The View.
I am.
The View is still going on after all these years. That's amazing. How long have you been watching it for, though? Since when?
I've been watching The View daily, maybe since like 2015, 2014.
So who was there back in those days? Whoopi was there.
Whoopi was there. Yeah, Whoopi's still the moderator.
Yeah.
Whoopi's, I don't know how long Whoopi's been moderating. Probably since like 2011 or 2009.
Yeah.
Like a long time. The View has been on since like 1999.
Wow.
It was the first show on television ever to have women talking to each other about the news and hot topics.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of pioneered the phrase hot topics.
Yeah.
It was kind of like before there was Twitter, honestly. They would be like the four or five ladies just talking about random news stories. Like they could be entertainment news, political news, really anything. And Barbara Walters founded it. Rest in peace. She just died.
Oh yeah.
Like last Christmas.
Yeah.
She was like 97 or something.
Oh my God.
But it's a genius show. Joy Behar has been on since the inception, except for 1 year in like 2013. And I interned for her other show.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm, when she was off The View. So I would give her coffee and stuff.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
How was she?
The same as on TV.
She's fun.
She has the same name as my grandmother, Josephine.
Okay.
Uh-huh. She called me Justin Bieber.
That's
She was
cute.
Like, here comes Justin Bieber with my coffee. I was like 22 years old. I loved that. I wrote that in my notes app as soon as it happened.
Wow.
Like, I just love the idea of four women talking to each other. Yeah, it rocks. When Meghan McCain was on, I barely watched it, though.
Really?
Yeah, she was so hard to watch. She really sucks.
Why? Because of her views or her personality?
Both. Her personality, both. Mostly.
Yeah.
Terrible. She would scream. She would interrupt. Like a little princess brat. Something I liked about her, I guess, is that she loves reality television. So she was, oh, it's okay. No problem. She would talk about the housewives, like Clay Aiken is her best friend.
Yeah.
She loves LGBTs.
Yeah.
But she's not a great conversationalist. So thank God she left, because once she left, I was able to watch it every day again. Yeah. That's how I get my news.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
What about Sherry Shepherd's not on anymore, right?
No, Sherry Shepherd actually has her own show now.
She does.
She replaced Wendy. Wendy went off the air because she was having health issues.
I heard about that.
Yeah. I mean, no one could replace Wendy because she has a singular voice in television. No one else has ever
met
like her.
Wendy several times.
You've been to Wendy?
I've met her.
Oh, you met her?
Yes.
Yes. So she's amazing.
My mom was going to some doctor's office in Jersey. And she was in the elevator and Wendy walked in.
Oh my God.
And my mom was like, Wendy, you have to wait because my son is a huge fan. I'm going to call him right now.
Wow.
So I got a call and I was like, you know, a teenager's like, what, mom, what do you want? And she was like, I have someone who wants to say hi.
Wow.
Wendy, I was like, what?
Wow.
So then she was like, how are you doing? And then she told my mom to go get plastic surgery from her doctor.
Oh my God.
She
didn't do it, but queen of New Jersey.
Yep.
Wendy Williams.
So that's Wendy. So she replaced Wendy.
Yes, okay. No, Sherry's on. Sherry's doing great. Sherry was great on The View. Star Jones was on The View.
Hasselbeck
was on The View.
Yeah, yeah.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck was the first person from a reality show to ever like become a main, like a daily talk show host. She was
what
from Survivor.
Show? To Survivor. Okay, that's
mm-hmm. And now there's this woman, the conservative is called Alyssa Farah Griffin.
I don't know her.
She used to work for Trump in his administration.
Oh, okay.
And then she denounced. Oh gosh, someone broke
Welcome
a glass.
To Manhattan.
We're in a cafe, remember?
Yep.
She like denounced the Capitol riots and now she's a co-host on The View. She's like a 33-year-old little princess type. Actually, she's doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
She's a lot better than Meghan. Oh, it's okay.
A broom just fell on us.
Yeah, The View is my thing. I watch it every morning with my hard-boiled egg and my Diet Coke and it keeps me grounded. It gives me a routine. I hope there's some viewers out there. And if you are a viewer and you love The View, I highly recommend a podcast called Deja The View.
Okay, interesting.
It's like a monthly podcast and they talk about The View, but it's like, if you love The View, you will love Deja The View. It's the best podcast of all time, basically.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So Whoopi's been making a lot of news lately for her hot takes. What is going on with Whoopi right now? I haven't been following.
Well, one of the news stories about Whoopi was that she made some like, maybe it was a Holocaust comment.
Oh.
And then she was suspended from the show for like 2 weeks over it. I don't even remember what she said. She'll say things that are just like incorrect or not appropriate often. Her views are really just all over the place.
Yeah.
She really is like a diehard Joe Biden moderate.
Uh-huh.
So like whenever something like political comes up, she'll advocate for like the most moderate stance,
mm-hmm.
which is really hard. But her most progressive views, I guess, are on like gay and transgender issues.
Really?
Like she rides for that community really hard. Obviously she herself is gay or transgender deep down.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like she doesn't identify that way. She's famously said, like, I'm not going to let a man stay in my house. Like, she's single.
She's been married several times.
Yeah, and she's learned that she only got married due to societal pressure and that she's meant to be single and live alone.
Huh.
And she just has people come over for sex, you know what I mean? And they leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting, Whoopi. And Whoopi lives, like, 5 minutes from where my family is in Jersey.
Yeah, she's a New Jersey girl for sure.
Whoop.
She has her house there. Her granddaughter Amara was on the show called Claim to Fame over the summer.
Okay.
Highly recommend watching Claim to Fame. It was amazing.
Do you remember when Whoopi had beef with Wendy?
No.
Because when Wendy had the radio show back in the day, which I used to listen to every day after school, she would, I mean, she was really trashy. Like, she would talk shit about everybody. And it was mean, like, very mean.
Yeah, she's mean.
She spoke about Whoopi's granddaughter or daughter. Somebody related to Whoopi. And she, like, it was when this person was young. So Whoopi was like, how could you talk about a child then Wendy had Whoopi on the TV show and she started sobbing and she's like, I'm so sorry, it was such a mistake. And Whoopi forgave her.
Oh my God.
Very performative.
Wow.
But
yeah, I mean, yeah, Whoopi has an attitude problem. She won't talk about any topic. If she doesn't care about the topic on The View, she won't talk at all the whole time. If she thinks the topic is superficial, she'll talk about the topic in like a Valley Girl mocking voice the whole time.
Do you think like they pay her to be like that, or is that her real personality?
Oh, it's real.
You think? Okay.
They don't pay her to be anyway.
Yeah.
Like, she is very powerful. She brings a lot of star power to the table. She's been doing it for so long. She has a lot of control. She doesn't have to show up for work, basically. She only does 4 days a week of the show instead of five. She probably gets the best treatment out of anyone there, probably the biggest paycheck. Maybe Joy is comparable, but she's not. Joy isn't the moderator, and Whoopi is, so they're paying her a lot, and she holds it down at The View, Without her, it would really fall apart. When Rosie was hosting The View, I loved Rosie on The View, but Rosie will never go back to The View. Rosie was treated really poorly. And
She got fired?
Maybe. Like, she wasn't used to being a host in the capacity that you needed to be at The View, which is a roundtable discussion. She really was used to running the show. And she brought a lot of that bossiness, like it's her show, to The View. Which in some instances was fantastic. Like when K-Fed and Britney broke up, she did a confetti release at The View. You know what I mean? That's so Rosie.
Yeah.
That's something the Rosie show would have done. But in other ways, it wasn't so great. She got in a huge fight with Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Oh, yeah.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck kind of claimed that Rosie was coming on to her too strong.
Yeah.
But I don't believe her. Rosie was just, you know, maybe Rosie had a small crush on her, but it wasn't sexual. Like, I'm gonna, it was sweet.
Yeah.
And she really did mentor Elizabeth a lot. Okay. One of the main things about Rosie on The View is that her feud with Donald Trump was really public.
Yes, that's what I was gonna bring up.
Yeah, and
Trump went in on her.
It was a big precursor to the 2016 election.
Yeah.
The View actually ties in the 2016 election in a major way, because the first episode of The View ever, Hillary Clinton was on it. And Trump was a topic. That was in 1999.
Oh, wow.
And so up until 2016, Hillary Clinton is almost like the perfect candidate for The View. She represents the politics of The View perfectly. And they rode so hard for her. And when she lost, everything at The View changed.
Yeah.
It was devastating. And Trump is almost the number one enemy of The View in a lot of ways.
He's never been
on The View. He's been on The View a lot.
During the election?
Before.
Because I remember, so when the Rosie thing happened, I remember he said something about like Rosie's partner.
Mm.
And he was like, I feel bad for her partner. What must it be like to go home and to be like, yeah, I'm dating this fat pig.
Yeah.
That's a very Trumpism.
I mean, Trump is hilarious and great television.
Yeah, in that regard.
He's a perfect villain.
I watch The Apprentice all the time.
Oh, I love The Apprentice. Mm-hmm.
The Dionne Warwick clips are genius.
I need to rewatch that. I mean, I'm a huge Survivor fan.
Yeah.
The Apprentice. That's all Mark Burnett.
Do you remember Trump went on Wendy before he ran?
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, she said, can we expect another season of Celebrity Apprentice? He's like, that depends if I run for president. And she's like, come on, Donald, we know you're not going to do it. And then like two random people in the crowd started cheering and they had like a Trump 2016 sign.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Yeah, wow. So it's crazy that he actually became president. They should have done a reality show about working at the White House.
That would have been great.
I mean, Trump isn't the root of the problem of American politics. And The View helped, The View and all of television created who he was, created the circumstances for him to become president. So it's, you know what I mean? But I just find it so interesting how Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are baked into the DNA of The View from the inception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting.
Yeah.
So now I want to move on to the Oscars.
The Oscars are coming up. They're tomorrow, or they're 2 days from today that we're recording.
2 days that we're recording.
Yeah.
So what are some hot takes you have about the Oscars? What's going on this year? What's up?
Oh my God. I'm not a person that has hot takes, but I watched all the Oscar movies this year.
You did? Okay.
Because I have a Regal pass. So I pay monthly to go to Regal. And I see every movie at Regal. I go to the movies alone once a week at least.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah.
How much does it cost nowadays in New York to go to a movie?
You pay $24.50 a month to go to unlimited movies at any Regal.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah, you can go as much as you want. So I do. And because I'm a loser, freak, like hermit, school-newer. I'm like, what could I do to not be at home on my phone for 2 hours? Yeah. I go to the movies. So I basically saw every movie. So I'm like, I have to see the Oscar. I'm like, I just, not that I really care, but yeah. I like, it gives me meaning.
Yeah.
I loved Tar. Okay. I loved The Fabelmans. Have you seen either of those?
I haven't seen anything this year, honestly.
You didn't see Everything Everywhere All at Once?
No, everybody keeps telling me to see it. I know
it's not good. No, but it's going to win every award.
A lot of people told me it was good. Do you think?
A lot of people think it's good. It's definitely going to win Best Picture, Best Actress, probably other awards, Best Supporting even. But it's not a, it's a great movie, sure.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it.
No.
It's basically like millennial BuzzFeed core humor in this kind of multiverse kind of premise that's reminiscent of Marvel in a sense. So it has mass appeal, but then the core of the story is, you know, a Chinese immigrant, maybe they're Chinese, I don't want to get it wrong, an Asian immigrant family with a queer daughter, which makes it not, you know, which makes it liberal in a sense, like appealing to that, a person who cares about social issues like that. And it's very tender at the core and touching, like you may cry watching it because of the core story, but all the trappings are like for a 15-year-old or for a person who is like, hasn't been online enough that like millennial BuzzFeed core humor is like funny to them.
Okay. Interesting. And it's a long movie.
Movies are long nowadays. Yeah, like 3 hours.
But nobody
like,
has attention spans anymore.
Why
What's
do they
the
make
deal?
Them 3 hours? Apparently they want you to get your money's worth at the theater.
No, it's okay. I don't, my attention span shot. The internet's ruined it. So 3 hours. My God.
Have you seen, you haven't seen any movies. I mean, can't even talk about them, but I recommend Women Talking.
Okay.
Loved that one. It's so good. Women are talking.
The women are talking. Do you like,
I like women when they talk to each other and women generally.
Yeah. So do you, I don't know. I mean, with these award shows in terms of like, do you take seriously who wins? Like, do you think it's, like it's just,
no, like who cares who wins or not? Everyone knows it's when you, politics or something.
Yeah. What do you make
but
of all
they're the, still meaningful. Yeah.
Why is it meaningful to you?
They're meaningful not to me, but just in general, like they mean something, whether or not, you know, the person deserves it, or like this, you know, this picture only won because X, Y, or Z reasons, or like this actress is only getting it because she's an Asian American woman who deserves it. In the end of the day, when you're applying for jobs and your agent's calling people, they know your name. You're an Academy Award winning actor, writer, director. It doesn't matter, like, if it means you're the best or not, like they are awards and they carry cachet and that's it.
What about, I mean, what do you make of all this political kind of controversy that surrounds these award shows? You think
it's funny? Or like, did you hear that like President Zelensky asked to be on the award show and they denied him again? Like 2 years in a row he wanted to appear at the Academy Awards and they're like, no, you really shouldn't. We can't have you, which I think is a good idea not to have him. Yeah, I don't think they should be bringing in like those topics, those political things to the show.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, I don't really think that many people take that seriously anymore though. Like it's become such a joke at this point.
What do you mean?
Just like all this, like the virtue signaling and whatnot and the speeches and the controversy over like who's being nominated. It's like the fact that it's so repetitive that all these award shows have these controversies surrounding them. It's like, it's just performative. I don't know.
Yeah. All of like, you know, the media ecosystem is just a headline generating machine in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So at the award show, the tradition is that the person who won the award from last year presents the person from the next year. And this year, Will Smith can't really present the award for Best Actor. So I'm interested to see how they handle that and who presents it.
Yeah. So then what do you make of this whole Chris Rock thing? I mean, the Netflix special came out this week. Everybody's talking about it.
Great timing for the special.
Yeah. Do you
care? Talked about it on The View today.
Of course they do.
do I care? No. I don't really think, I mean, it was great to see someone get slapped on TV, like, but it was just a slap at the end of the day. It wasn't a punch. It wasn't like, you know, it was wrong to do, but it wasn't the greatest offense of all time. You know, people, it's sensational. And I think that's it. I don't really think there's any substance behind it. I think Will Smith is like a scary man with a lot of pent up issues and repressed feelings.
Yeah.
And that those kind of people act out or sometimes hit somebody, but a hit like that isn't more than just like someone throwing a hissy fit. It didn't inflict like real pain or harm. Like, I don't know. I don't really care about it.
I mean, my, I don't know. My based take is that like everything that happens at award shows are like, everything's planned. It's all.
You think it's planned?
Going into what you were saying about like these secular kinds of liturgical worshiping.
Yeah.
I do think there's something very ritualistic about all of these award shows and the scandals, the sensational kind of controversies that happen. Like, I do think it's a form of expiation in a sense. Like, you know, Will Smith was like the sacrificial victim. And then, and this is what I said. As soon as I saw what happens, okay, this was all planned.
It wasn't, though.
I don't know.
I don't believe that anyway. Continue.
I'm gonna do. But no, I mean, I think, so yeah, like Will Smith is humiliated. Now everybody's talking. He's the sacrificial lamb. And then, and I said this, Chris Rock is gonna get a Netflix special very soon. And this is gonna be the center of it. And it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's lunatic to say, but I feel like this, everything in award shows that there's always some stupid spectacle. And I'm like,
yeah, it's a spectacle and they just take advantage of it once it happens.
Yeah. So whether it's planned or not, I don't know.
It's
but
like when Kanye West,
though.
You think, I don't think it's, I don't think Will Smith slapping Chris Rock was predictable in any way. And I think that's the only reason it's sensational though.
But you don't think these like sensational things happen on award shows? Like I expect something's going to happen at the Oscars. I don't know if it's going to be a slap.
Not always. Sometimes nothing happens, which sucks. We all pray something.
We'll find out. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of live television, which I love live television. I watch everything that's live, usually like any mass events. I like it. I'm here at the altar of popular culture, taking notes and listening. And I think it's interesting how it influences at least, you know, discussions in the public.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what all it's good for. Like on The View today, they were like, what do you think about Chris Rock's Netflix special? Well, great timing, wasn't it? Or like, is it appropriate to make jokes about Will Smith at the Oscars? There's a room where there's gonna be jokes about the slap. And some of them are like, they shouldn't make any jokes about it. Chris Rock's response in his Netflix special closes the loop and it's over. Let's please not talk about it anymore. And then some of them are like, they can make jokes about it. Who cares? It's the Oscars. We're going to expect jokes about it. They should address it. So it's like, oh, like none of this matters.
Yeah. Well, soon, sir, we'll soon find out what's going to happen.
I did like the movie that Will Smith was in, King Richard. It was great.
Okay, so I started watching it and then my HBO Max account cut out for some reason.
Oh,
I never finished it. So I liked what I saw.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
I have to finish it somehow. But
I like when movies are good.
Okay. All right. So we'll see who wins. Any last hot takes? Anything else you want to bring up?
I'd love to plug something. Yes. About daylight savings time.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Tell us. I want to hear about daylight savings.
I'm passionate about this. I guess. I don't know. Do you have any opinion on changing the clocks back and forth? Do you think this is a practice we should continue doing?
I've always thought it was weird and confusing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, whatever it is.
It just like happens and you deal with it. It doesn't really affect you.
No. But why do you feel so strongly about it?
I don't know. Time itself is political, right?
Yeah.
How it's managed, how it's kept. We have a 7-day week. It's called the work week. We use the Gregorian calendar. Yeah. We're in Judeo-Christian time. We count the years by Christ.
Yeah.
All of these things are very meaningful. They structure our lives, time. And changing it disrupts life. And it just makes no sense to me. Okay, there's standard time and there's daylight savings time. There are bills going through Congress and state senates to permanently put us into daylight savings time, which is the time we keep in the summer.
Okay.
It's an hour ahead of standard time. People like this because it gives us, we don't come out of work and it's dark out. People hate that. People are more optimistic when there's some sun at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I understand that. This is a very juvenile position to take.
Yeah.
Because standard time is actual time. It's time that measures the sun based on the natural progression of the earth and the sun. It may be sad that the sun will set earlier in summer by an hour. Do we need the sun out at 9 p.m. in the summer? Should we be watching Jeopardy in broad daylight? I don't think so. And in the winter, kids would be going to school in the dark. It's 8 a.m., it's pitch black, and they're waiting for the bus.
Yeah.
In 1968, maybe it was, or 1974, they did a permanent daylight savings time, and kids died going to school.
Oh my God.
Yes. Drivers are groggy in the morning.
Yeah.
But truck drivers, because people are going to work at 8 a.m., and it should be light out.
Yeah.
That's a really good reason to keep up, to keep standard time. Mm-hmm. Even if we're going to change the time back and forth, it should never be a permanent daylight savings time.
Yeah.
Right. As a teenager, I would have told you we need daylight savings time because I wake up at 10 a.m. and I don't go to bed to 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. But if you're just thinking about everybody and like real life, time should relate to the natural progression of the sun. When it's noon, the sun should be at its peak position. Mm-hmm. There's just no reason to keep changing it. So if people are going to be proposing laws to stop the change, which a lot of people want, people, you know, it's annoying to change the time. It doesn't make any sense. There's no reason we're doing it other than we're grandfathered into it, right?
Yeah.
So if we're going to be making laws about the time at all, it should be to keep standard time. It would just make a lot more sense. And I don't want to keep changing the time. I think it is negative, has a net negative effect psychologically. I think it keeps the people down. Mm-hmm. I just don't agree with it in any sense. I can't help it. I don't know why I'm so passionate about it. Maybe because I'm an astrologer.
Maybe.
And I believe in natural time or that astrology is my favorite timekeeping system.
Okay.
It is the most natural way to keep time. And if I was running the world, we would change our months to be the astrological seasons. It makes a lot more sense. There's another way to keep time that is 13 months, which I also agree with.
Okay.
But anyway.
Is that solar or lunar?
It's more lunar to have a 13-month calendar.
That's what I was going
to
ask. Should we go lunar?
We could have a calendar where every month is an equal 4 weeks. And then every 6 years or something, or so many years, there's like an extra week in the calendar, which we could have holiday.
Okay.
Okay.
Like a leap week.
Huh.
Uh-huh.
So isn't Judaism and Islam are lunar, right? Islam's lunar.
And there are lunar holidays in Christianity, like Easter.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if we based our calendar around the sun and the moon, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if the secular time is wrapped up in religious time, and religious time is wrapped up in astrological time and pagan time, and I just wish more of that timekeeping. I just think it is more human, more uniting to keep time. I think it's a more human way to keep time. And I think it's also neutral because it's just the facts of the movement of the heavens.
So,
standard time just matches better with natural time.
But are there like political movements that people can become part of to like advocate for these things?
I don't know. I think there should be. I would love to join a political movement to keep standard time.
I feel like Marianne Williamson would be the right person to lead that.
I think so too. There's a Twitter account called Save Standard Time, and they're the only group I know that's doing any work to kind of get the word out about standard time. I don't know. I just think like it's a no-brainer. It's kind of easy to do. And if there's no like left or right political valence to it, it's kind of just a common sense political choice. Time is political, and it's just a simplification of time, and it's more rational than daylight savings time. If we're going to have a permanent time, we should not get a permanent daylight savings time, which we may due to the laws that are trying to get passed. If we get a permanent daylight time, it's not going to work, and we're going to move back to having two times again. And they're going to say, see, we can't have one time when we could if it was standard time. And if it could just be over with one standard time. Arizona does it.
Wait, but if we were to change this, would this have to be like a whole global, like international movement? Or
no,
we
other countries don't change the clocks.
You're right. Okay.
Arizona doesn't. And it could, there's another state, I think it might be Colorado, that's making a bill to stop it too. Some states, though, are going to be permanent daylight savings time.
Wow.
So it's like there is movement right now towards this thing. And I think there could be a cascading effect and a federal effect down the line. We just have to like push it towards standard time because that is the most rational choice between these two times.
Okay.
Period.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you just enlightened me right now.
There's I'm glad. It's just, I gotta get them. I'm like, I don't see anyone really talking about this. And I feel like, okay, this is something that I could take up.
Wow. So the movement will begin. The movement will begin. We'll see. We'll
okay,
see
we're starting happens. With this episode. Yeah, yeah. People got this far. Like, yeah. Join me.
All right. So, Kyle, before we go, anything you want to plug?
Yeah. Buy merch at my store. I-need-god.com. I'm having an Easter drop in like 4 weeks.
Okay.
And it's like a lot. I'm elevating everything. It's going to be like more custom, designed a little higher. Not just t-shirts, and I'm really excited for that. And then I also have a podcast. I just started it maybe like 6 months ago, and it's on our website, i-need-god.com, or you could just search for it. It's called I Need God Pod.
Okay.
And I just like do, like honestly, you could be on it because I would love to talk to you about being an adjunct professor of religion or whatever studies you've done in religious studies, history of that, or you know, Greek Orthodox stuff. But it's just different topics in spirituality and religion. Yeah, and I've been, you know, just doing it because I feel like there's not many places where you can go just to get general spiritual and religious conversations.
Awesome.
So that's it. Thank you for having me on. It was really fun talking to you.
This was a good time.
Yeah, and I love where we're recording. I hope it comes out okay.
Yeah, hopefully all the banging and the shattering cups doesn't come through too loud.
But yeah.
The ambiance was cool.
This is almost like ASMR.
In a way, yeah. So hopefully you enjoy the background vibes. But Kyle, thanks for coming on.
Thank you again. Bye, everyone.
Bye.